from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Shun Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. This may, may be the first day of the week for a lot of you. Appreciate you getting up with us. Hope you had a good... thank you, Seth. Hope you had a good Labor Day weekend, if that's what you were doing yesterday. If you're on your way in today, get to work. Drive safe. Good to be with you. I'm Shun Pendergast.
But back to the grind. That's right, Pay attention to your boss. Yep. Follow instructions.
Yeah.
Quit being such a jackass all the time.
Right. That's good
there's
instruction.
There's your pep talk.
That's exactly what I told my son last night. Today's his first day as a working man in America, as Will Anderson.
Is it really?
Today. Yeah. Yeah,
he can always remember. Yeah, he can commemorate it because it's the day after Labor Day. It's a very fitting time to start work. He's like Will Anderson was last year when he was all excited to be an actual employee.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he was looking around at the camera crew and he's like, "You guys are my coworkers.
We're not. It's not like college anymore. Yeah, I'm a working man in America. That's what I kept telling Sammy yesterday. I'm like, you're Will Anderson. You're a working man in America now."
I'm sure the guys on the camera crew are like, "Yeah, we're exactly like you. We are sharing the same experience in life."
You want to see my signing bonus? I'm wearing it on my head. It's this cap. They gave
I'm
it to me.
I'm being paid with exposure.
Will Anderson's impossible to get angry at. I think even those cameramen were like, "You know what? This guy's pretty cool. I kind of like." He's the first one to ever acknowledge that we're coworkers. I like him. I like this.
If I were to be executed by the state, I would want Will Anderson to be the executioner. I feel like he'd give me a good pep talk on into the afterlife.
Yeah, yeah.
Whichever direction I'd be headed.
He'd remind you of the actual good things you did in life.
Yeah.
He's like, hey man, don't focus on what got you here. Focus on the good times.
Listen, man, there's a good chance you're going to hell, but you just gotta grind, man. Yeah. You just gotta grind.
Hell's not for everybody.
I'm gonna be you just be the best dweller in hell that you can.
Yeah, that's right.
Every day.
Oh my god. So we've got Nick Caserio coming on at 7:30 today. That'll be fun in advance of the season starting here. So
it will be fun. We're gonna make it fun for him as I've been thinking about different ways I can grill him without him realizing he's being grilled.
He sent me some topics last night. He was he said, "Are we going to talk about Joey Chestnut? Are we going to talk about I forget, there were like two other things on there." I'm like, "Yeah, well, so we can hit those things."
And honestly, there's obviously some people like to argue that competitive eating is a sport. There's definitely some parallels between competitive eating and any other sport.
For sure.
Ideal body weight of a competitive eater.
Dude.
Which, it's this ironic thing where sometimes I'm watching these eating competitions and I'm looking at the fat guys and I'm like, this guy doesn't want it. This guy's just like, this guy's not committed to the life. Because the good ones are all these super skinny dudes.
Yeah.
And like, it's clear that there must be some advantage to being skinnier and less competition in there for volume in your gut, but those fat guys they're just out there like rank amateurs just doing it for the love of the game.
If you missed it and you're wondering what we're talking about, Joey Chestnut made history yesterday.
Don't spoil it for me. I haven't finished it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. It just showed up on Netflix. A lot of people, most people probably haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, gotcha. It was live yesterday. It was live.
Yeah. I know, but this isn't like the Super Bowl or something where people, you know, like everybody listening right now would know who won the Super Bowl.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I have the results in headlines today. Do I delete that from headlines?
I think this is different than the normal sports thing.
Really?
I think
it was the lead bullet on ESPN.com yesterday.
We'll give a spoiler alert. And look, I'm watching this thing, again, ironically enough, at 1.5 speed. I'm watching the competitive eating speed champ because I'm trying to finish it.
But you're only watching it because I'm your co-host. You wouldn't be watching this
thing. I would watch it. I wouldn't have felt a pressing need to watch it, but it's way better than I thought it was going to be.
The production was excellent.
They do a good job of like creating. It's kind of like the Olympics where it's some sport that you don't follow or care about typically, but they do such a good job of setting up the story that you get drawn in.
Yeah, WWE. Like, here's what the rivalry is built on. You know, like for those who don't know, this isn't spoiling anything. It was Joey Chestnut versus Takira Kobayashi, which was like the rivalry back in the mid-2000s before Kobayashi became super loco and just started quit on the Eating Federation, started showing up like the crow in the rafters, you know, like it.
He was like Prince.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he went off on his own journey and probably changed his name to an unpronounceable symbol. Yeah. You can give it away. Go ahead, because it's an event that happened.
I think people are more likely to watch it if I say this. Joey Chestnut set the world record. He broke his own world record. He had 83 hot dogs. So it was a good day of sports watching yesterday. So you had that at 2 o'clock. You had the Astros at 3 o'clock. And you had Boston College and Florida State at nighttime. And it was a very intriguing day. Now, the Astros lost. That kind of sucked. I guess my thing with the Astros, they lost 5-3 yesterday, Seth. And Justin Verlander, again, was not sharp. He walked
three consecutive batters to open the game for the first time in his career. Much better after that.
It was a very, very, very sideways day for Justin Verlander. He begged to stay in the fifth inning to just get through five. He was at 100 pitches. There were runners on base. Joe Espada came out, and it was funny to listen to Bagwell and Callis on the call. Bagwell's doing color for this series. Blum is getting a short break here. And Bagwell, as a spot is walking in the mound, Bagwell's like, no way. No way he's coming out. There's no way. In other words, Verlander is going to talk him into leaving him in the game, which he did. And he gave up a hit. It was a fluky bloop hit. But that was enough to chase Verlander. And again, it was a fluky hit that chased him from the game. But it wasn't a good – that he was at 100 pitches midway through the fifth is kind of indicative of where he is right now, which to me begs the question – as well as these other guys are pitching right now, if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, Verlander's not one of your top three guys, right?
No, not if he doesn't kind of just all of a sudden string together two or three really good starts in a row.
Right.
Because it's not yet. You can't treat him by his resume. You can't go out there and say, well, he's, you know, all caps Verlander. This is now business.
So you're saying
are we gonna throw Bagwell out there at first because of the back of his baseball card or something?
I'll point out they did play Jose Abreu for the first 2 months. The back of the baseball card is factored in at times with this team. That's why I bring up the question. You know, like this team now. The playoffs are a different story than trotting Abreu out there in the middle of May. I understand that. I do wonder, like, what. Does Verlander have to pitch as well as these other three or four guys are pitching right now to get back into the playoff rotation? Or is there a sliding scale because he's just... This version of Verlander doesn't deserve to start a playoff game compared to Fromber and Hunter and even Spencer Arrighetti at this point, the way he's pitched the last month. Or Kikuchi, who's, you know, they're 6-0 in his starts. But that's what I wonder. Like, that's what's really intriguing to me. Like, is there a sliding scale? Like, if Verlander gets his ERA back into the mid-threes by the end of the season, he's like 4-something right now. If he gets his ERA back into the mid-threes and he looks like 80 to 85% of Justin Verlander, is that enough? He was their game one starter in the playoffs last year.
I know. It's not like Verlander also has a reputation as just like, oh, he's nails in the playoffs, and that's where, okay, you got to have that experience in there. That's not who he's been in his career in the playoffs, and now he looks like he's a guy that's working his way back. I think some of it, I guess, if the trajectory is good, if like his overall numbers don't have to be in line with his career numbers or anything, but if it looks like, okay, this is just an older guy who's taking a little while to come back, then I would be tempted when you enter the playoffs that, all right, the adrenaline burst of the playoffs can be the cherry on top of this. But if he struggles, how many starts will he have over the next
month? He's had three since he's been back. They've got like about 30 games. I don't know, probably four or five. So
four or five starts. Yeah. If he puts together a string of three Verlander type performances, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you got to go with the hot hands.
Yeah.
You got to go with the guys that are the best performers this year in 2024. And the back of Verlander's baseball card really shouldn't help as much.
Yeah.
No, it's just, you know, I'm also, I'm sure Bagwell would have the opposite take, and he would be very adamant about telling, he'd make 18 points about how nobody else knows what they're talking about, and analytics.
Sounds like you had the sound turned up yesterday on the game.
I was, man. Jeez, singles are what win you baseball games, runs.
That was weird, man.
A lot of people want to say, it's like everything he says is almost like something about how stupid everybody else is. Like, all right, Jordan's never won a baseball game with three home runs.
Yeah, Yiner gets a bloop single. He's like, those are the hits that win you games. I'm like, I don't know, man. I watched Jordan hit three home runs, and it was a very comfortable afternoon for me.
Yeah. Can we just settle in on lots of things win you baseball games?
Yeah.
Why the hell do people have to make it about, like, no, this is the thing that wins you games?
I'm going to tell you the scariest thing that Bagwell said to me yesterday, with the understanding that this is a guy who's helping make key decisions with the baseball team, is when Forrest Whitley came in the ninth inning. And I'm verbatim, because I went back. Amy was sitting next to me. I went back and rewound so I get the exact quote, so I'm not misquoting him here, paraphrasing or anything. He literally said this about Forrest Whitley. Mind you, one of their top prospects for the last 8 years, and who has been dealing at Sugar Land for the last month and a half. Quote, I remember he used to have a real good changeup. I don't know if he still does or not, but it used to be real good. End quote.
Yeah.
This guy's part of the brain trust. He's part of like the five-headed monster making decisions. This is one of the, I know I'm calling him one of their top prospects, and I understand Forrest Whitley's journey, that he hasn't pitched like
he's
a top 47 prospect.
47 years old.
Right. Yeah. I understand he hasn't pitched like a top prospect for the most part. For the last couple months he has. He's been amazing. Coming out of the bullpen in Sugarland, and he struck out the side yesterday. Got a little trafficy, but that was cool to see him strike out the side yesterday. But when, like, Bagwell acting like he hasn't watched Forrest Whitley pitch in like 5 years. Like, he's at Sugarland. He's right down the road.
It's Bagwell's tone of voice when a lot of times he talks down on so many of the things that have been really good for the Astros.
Yeah.
Like the analytics and the scouting, or just in the different way that people, it's not even the analytics bros. It's the actual hardcore baseball people, you know, who have absorbed what they want from analytics, but also think about baseball a little bit differently because the game has changed.
Yeah.
He needs to bash basically other people in the organization while at the same time admitting an open ignorance of what it is they do. And it starts to grind at me in a way that it didn't used to. I used to kind of like it, but now because of the Jose Abreu experience, now it kind of gets me twisted up inside.
I'm glad you acknowledge that, because that's 100%, I think, what it's, people who are critical of Bagwell in the booth now, this Abreu signing and the Montero signing have changed everything as far as like how baseball intelligent Bagwell's prism is for everybody. Before that, it was like, boy, it's really refreshing here. He's got such an interesting perspective on things, and he's the thinking man's baseball guy. And now he's in there like, I don't know, I heard Forrest Whitley has a good changeup. Like, what are we doing?
And then the other side of it, too, is I was extra kind of peeved about it because the Astros did me the favor of making me look like an absolute fool yesterday. And I'm going to spend all day just acknowledging on the text line and on the YouTube chat how wrong I was about Kyle Tucker's injury.
Oh.
Because I was the girl at the party that was just happy that the popular guy was paying the attention, even though he was making fun of me and setting up like a pig's blood dumping on my head. The Astros went full carry on me. That's what they did.
We will get to that's a reference right there. Kids, Carrie was a movie starring Sissy Spacek back in 1977. We'll get to the Kyle Tucker news as well. We will hit that. Something that all of a sudden has me very concerned about this Texans game coming up on Sunday, and it's right in my wheelhouse. We will get to this. We'll get to headlines later in the hour. Nick Caserio at 7:30. Stay there.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, one other Astros note that has Seth in knots right now. We were right there when it happened, Seth. We were at the game. We were just mere feet away from Kyle Tucker as he fouled a ball off his shin. And after months of speculating that it may not have been a fracture of the shin, as it turns out, according to three sources that Chandler Rome of The Athletic talked to, turns out the imaging showed, oh yeah, Kyle Tucker, slight fracture of the shin.
Well, yeah, and after Kyle Tucker himself, you know, pretty much confirmed it.
Yeah.
After various members, I don't understand why the Astros do this.
Yeah,
they lie about stuff that there's no reason to lie about.
Yeah.
I just, if anything, it would make it better for everybody if you would have just said at some point, Kyle Tucker, it turns out. I wonder sometimes if it's this. It's that, look, medical science is never an exact science when it comes to the individual. There's a lot more guesswork, and there's a lot more uncertainty than we'd all like to believe there is. And sometimes things as simple as a fracture aren't so easy to detect. And I feel like they're almost being overprotective of their reputation by like not wanting to say, okay, you know what, at first maybe we misdiagnosed it, there was a fracture and there wasn't. They don't want to admit that because it would be embarrassing. So instead, they're just evasive about something that's not, at the end of the day, a really big deal. Meanwhile, you got Seth Payne up there being like, I trust the Astros. If they say it was a deep shin bruise, well, it was a deep shin bruise. Are you guys so skeptical?
They
turned me into a jerk.
No, they had you in medical professor mode explaining compression, whatever the hell it is, to everybody.
Apologetic professor. Like, it's not like I'm sitting there acting like I really know what I'm talking about. I always try to say, look, I don't know.
Go back and watch the YouTube. You were up there with your laser pointer and your leg pointing out.
No, look, a lot of people said, come on, God. come on, Seth, obviously he had a break. And I said, well, no, because it doesn't, there's plenty of reasons where he could have been out this long and it wasn't a break. So I figured, why would the Astros, why would they lie about that? There's no reason to. And yet, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just their default mode.
Is it weird?
I guess.
It's
annoying.
Yeah, the default mode is set at liar. It's weird. Like, if it were a football player, then I would understand it more because that's a sport where guys can target injuries. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, theoretically, pitchers could too, but it's,
I guess throwing at his shin, that would be awfully strange.
But even then in football, like, when it's a break, you know, unless it's the Super Bowl and you're Jack Youngblood, you're generally not going to be out there on a broken shin.
No.
So I think that that's where it's so confusing. And no matter what sport it is, all right, the guy's not going to come back until it's healed.
Right.
Could you do us the basic courtesy of just at least telling us why? If I had found out that it was a break that was having a hard time recovering, then at least it makes a little bit more sense. I don't know if it would have changed things in the grand scheme of things. It's just that I don't know why they would be evasive about it.
Does the nature, now knowing the nature of the injury, make you feel any sort of way as to A, when Kyle Tucker is coming back, and B, what he'll look like when he comes back?
No, because it still seems like, obviously, a small fracture typically wouldn't take this long to recover from.
Okay.
So it's not even the fracture
itself. You say obviously. I have no idea. Really? It doesn't
take... Well, no, I don't know. If you think about a simple fracture, bones heal quickly.
They do?
So it's all the other stuff that's happened. The fact that he wasn't able to move normally for several months. That's the stuff you worry about. At some point... I could see from the organization standpoint, maybe it's a little bit embarrassing if you had that guy out there hobbling around and it turned out that his leg was actually broken the whole time you were doing it.
Yeah.
But it's just strange. I try to step back and have perspective on it, and it still doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, other than that maybe the Astros, maybe medically they do deserve more scrutiny. I'm very careful and hesitant to lamb-based team medical staffs because of everything I just talked about. It's not an exact science. There's no actual way to know exactly what's going on in any given situation. But why the hell, why are they so evasive about it?
I don't know, yeah.
I told you, I feel, because we're gonna, like, I have to, I they made a fool out of me.
It's personal for you.
But I don't want to make it personal because at the end of the day, I'm just a sports radio dude. It doesn't me being embarrassed by continually getting up here and saying, no, I trust the Astros aren't lying to me.
You don't want to make it personal, but it's clearly something you're working through right now.
It's something I'm working through, right? No, but this is one of those classic things. It's kind of like any other topic where the sports writers and the sports media don't understand that this is more about them than the actual listeners. This does seem to be something that that Astros fans get irked by.
Yeah.
And I maybe it goes back to the same, you know, having Bagwell stand on his pulpit and tell you to look at the back of the baseball card. You end up feeling a little bit like a schmuck. You know, like you're looking around, you're like, am I just a schmuck? Am I really supposed to look at the back of the baseball card and ignore somebody who's playing awful in front of me? Likewise, I let them turn me into a schmuck when it came to Kyle Tucker. I said, well, sure, why would they lie about his leg being broken? That would be a weird thing to lie about. I trust that the Astros are telling me the truth.
Probably help them that they turned into the hottest team in baseball right after that injury. You know, like,
right, exactly.
You know,
which
winning
is what I say.
Yeah.
I'm like the girl nobody's ever paid attention to, but now that the popular kids are even just making fun of me for their own amusement, I'm kind of like, oh, it's nice to be
I'm in the circle.
Yeah.
The court jester was included too.
Of course I'll hide that murder weapon for you.
Right.
Yes, of course. Do I get invited to the party tonight? Right. Yeah, that's me. That's me. I might as well be wearing headgear braces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like the night braces that you wore, like the strap around your neck thingy?
Well, not me personally.
I did.
Stud.
I had to back in the day.
You had to wear headgear? You didn't have to wear it to school, though?
At night, yeah, when I slept at night.
We're going to fix your teeth so you'll be more popular. How are we going to do that? You're going to look like a freak for 3 years.
Yeah. And you're going to get the worst.
Don't worry, the kids will never cement your status in their eyes and treat you that way for the rest of your life.
Just at night, just when I was sleeping, when nobody was watching. Okay, I'm nervous about the Texans game now. I said yesterday I was a little surprised that the Texans were a 2.5-point favorite in this game. As you pointed out, you jumped on this baby at Texans minus one.
Yeah, lock that baby in.
Yeah, yeah. You're like a stockbroker. The market has moved in your direction.
Texans, yeah, whatever. I'm still feeling the sting from the Aggies, but yeah.
Texans minus 2.5 right now. And again, like I said yesterday, I'm a little surprised they're a favorite on the road. I know the Colts aren't a great team, but I think they're a good team.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised they're even a favorite. They are a favorite that's moving more into further favorite land. They're nearly a field goal favorite on the road in what's going to be, a pretty hostile NFL environment. I was very surprised then to see, maybe I shouldn't be because it's probably a lot of square bettors that are on it at minus 2.5, but 85% of the bets and 91% of the money in Vegas right now are on the Texans minus 2.5 in Indy. And this, if you're not well-versed in the dark arts of degenerate gambling, you should be, and you're a Texan fan, you should be nervous about this. When the public is all on somebody like this, that's not a good sign.
That's right. Usually, you know, like the public affects the gambling line, and the hardcore handicappers will put out what they feel is what should be the spread. But then, you know, obviously, if a lot of people just start piling on one side, that it moves it. And usually, the public doesn't mean they're wrong about the win or their loss, but a lot of times they're betting with emotion. They're betting with basically what amounted to a PR campaign on behalf of C.J. Stroud and the Texans by the national media all offseason long.
That's it.
I mean, there's been so much adulation publicly. It's like a political candidate who's just piling money into the campaign advertising, and it affects a lot of people. That's where it is right now. Now, I do think the hardcore handicapping, I think at the very least, probably would have put this as an even matchup with the Texans on the road.
Yep.
You feel better about the Texans quarterback than you do about the unknown aspects of Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, the Colts, I think, are a good team. The Texans are a better team. On a neutral field, I think the Texans would probably be favored by at least a field goal. Maybe 3, 3.5, something like that, on a neutral field. But they're a slight favorite on a neutral, maybe not 3, but whatever. Like a field under between 0 and a field goal favorite. The Texans are the better team with, to your point, the better quarterback. Here was DeMeco Ryans yesterday. Very first question right out of the shoot at his press conference was about Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson.
It's been a really great matchup for us to start off the year. Anthony Richardson, as he showed with the limited amount of snaps that he's had, he's shown that he can be a dynamic playmaker, you know, running the ball, also throwing the football. So he's a playmaker, right? You have to account for him every single snap just because of his dynamic ability, right, to run the football. So he poses a really good challenge for us defensively, and we definitely have our hands full.
Okay. So, yeah, like Anthony, that's the big wild card. Seth, as you've pointed out, we really don't know what Anthony Richardson is still at this point. Like, he only played 4 games. Like, we know he can run. We know he's an amazing athlete. The question is, has he improved as a passer at all?
Has he improved as a passer in terms of his consistency? And just going back and watching the preseason, it's dicey, I know. But especially when I think the biggest indicator for me is that the Colts played Anthony Richardson the full first half in their 3rd preseason game and against the Bengals' 2nd and 3rd stringers. And some of the things that popped up in that game were things that no matter who the Colts were going against, it was very clear that Anthony Richardson and his receivers weren't on the same page at times. Mm-hmm. And I think usually it was the receivers' fault. But I think that they're still working some things out. So as far as having the full integration of Anthony Richardson and the receivers, including A.D. Mitchell, who's a rookie, into Shane Steichen's offense, I think they're not going to be a finished product in week one. That makes me feel good about the Texans. And also, Anthony, he makes some incredibly awesome plays, but then a lot of the simple stuff, a lot of the easy throws, he's off target. So I think there's still a couple of blemishes that I believe are real for the Colts, but there's still also the threat of Anthony Richardson's legs, which I think it was pretty clear in the preseason. on a lot of their zone reads and RPOs, he flat out just, I don't think he was allowed to run. I think he it was going to be a handoff no matter what, or it was going to be a pass no matter what. He can still run, and he can still make those circus throws. So that's the scary part. On any given Sunday at noon Central, he can still be very much a headache.
If I had to guess, Texan fans in their cars right now following the preseason, they probably didn't watch nearly as much Anthony Richardson as you did. The one headline they probably saw from that Bengals game was that he threw a pick six. And they're like, okay, well, Anthony Richardson's still having problems deciphering defenses or whatever the case may be. You rewatched that. Was the pick six on him, or was that on was that somebody else's fault?
It was almost definitely on the tight end. Okay. I talked to Owen Daniels about this. Oh no, I talked to Owen Daniels about a different play in which I think Anthony Richardson made the wrong decision in week one. But that one, there, like the tight end. The way he adjusted to his route on that one, I think that was on Anthony Richardson. There was another near pick in the third game where I think A.D. Mitchell broke off his route when he shouldn't have. I could tell by the look of shame on A.D. Mitchell's face on the sideline after he talked to the... the pick six I wouldn't put on Anthony Richardson. I think it was actually a pretty accurate throw for where he thought the receiver was going to be.
Okay, well, that sucks. I was hoping it was his fault. Damn.
Yeah. No, and it wasn't even an inaccurate throw. On the broadcast, it didn't help that Herb Street, who just kind of dabbles in the NFL, Herb Street said it was like, there's that inaccuracy that we've seen before. Like, nah, it was actually an accurate
former
throw.
Former quarterback putting that on him too, huh?
Herb Street. Well, he revised it later on. I went back to watch the TV copy, and Herb Street revised it and said that they weren't on the same page probably, but... you know, when people are just watching the highlight reel, they just hear Herb Street saying, look, there's that inaccuracy you've talked about.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio joins us in a little under an hour. 7:30, he'll join us on the show today. Up next, headlines. We've got the Astros. Where are they in the standings? College football last night. Familiar face, man. Don't scoff at old B.O.B. at Boston College. We've got that. And Texans for you in headlines as well. Stay there.
And Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the Let's start with the Houston Astros. They lose 5-3 to the Reds yesterday. Afternoon game, Labor Day game. Justin Verlander labored on Labor Day. He was knocked out in the fifth inning, threw over 100 pitches, walked the bases loaded to start the game. So the tone was set early on in this game that we were not getting the old Justin Verlander yet. It remains to be seen if we get the old Justin Verlander at some point between now and October. Weird schedule. They're off today, and then they play two more against Cincinnati.
Right. They just took a bye. I wonder if there's a... I meant to look this up. I thought maybe there was like some kind of conflict in Cincinnati. Maybe
I don't know.
Concert scheduled or something that the schedule makers couldn't work around.
Yes.
I kind of like it. The fill-in for Julia Morales there, her name escapes me.
Lauren Callender, yeah.
Lauren Callender. She, you know, she was talking about how nice it is to be in Cincinnati. She was very impressed with the city she was. I liked that, okay. Of all the cities in Major League Baseball, that might be the one that I was least optimistic.
That would be bottom five for like a random off day for me, to be in Cincinnati.
Yeah, no shade on Cincinnati. It's a fine enough town, but there's not necessarily a whole lot that I'd be excited to be. You know, oh, I've got an afternoon in Cincinnati. Yeah. Thank you, baseball schedulers.
Boy,
awesome.
This is a gift from the gods. So the Astros lose yesterday. Good news, Seattle's still bad at baseball. They got walked off.
Yeah.
They got walked off by the A's yesterday. This is the ninth time that Seattle has been walked off this year by the opposition. That's really hard to do when you consider that you're only mathematically able to get walked off in half of your games. You can only get walked off when you're on the road.
That's it.
And they've been walked off nine times this season already.
They lack the clutch gene, Sean, as we've
so,
seen.
Man. Yeah.
You know, you get swept in the playoffs. It's just all that. Yeah. Just get a clutch gene, man.
Yep. Six games is the gap right now. Astros will be back at it tomorrow. I want to get to this. College football last night. Bill O'Brien, Boston College. And I know, look, I was skeptical about O'Brien coming into this new age of college football. when he got fired by the Texans a few years ago, that was pre-NIL and probably early phase transfer portal. And my feeling at the time was Bill O'Brien belongs in college. I think that's where he would thrive as a head coach more than he would in the NFL. The early returns last night are good. They went into Tallahassee. Now, we don't know what Florida State is this year. It's, thus far, it's not been good. But they dominated Florida State last night. Boston College goes into Tallahassee, and they dominate a team that's just several months removed from being in the playoff conversation in football, 28-13. And they could it could have been 35-13, but O'Brien was taking knees at the end of the game in a goal-to-go situation.
Florida State rushed for 23 yards?
Yes.
I mean, they took it to them physically.
Yeah, they did.
And it was impressive. It was impressive.
Yeah.
Florida State now 0-2. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, it's bad news for the ACC. I think it's funny. The two schools that are suing the ACC, trying to get out of their grant of rights contract that runs through like three more generations of people. Florida State and Clemson, 0-3 to start the season combined, the two of them.
Suing we got to get out of here. We can't be slumming it with these clowns anymore. And everyone's like, I don't know. Looks like you're right where you should be.
Exactly.
Frankly.
Exactly. It was funny. There was an article in the on ESPN. Pete Thamel spent a bunch of time with Bill O'Brien up in B.C. As he was getting ready for the season. It sounded like traveled with him to New York for some fundraising trips and things like that.
He's an embedded journo.
Yeah. It was a good article. It was a really good article. If you're a Texan fan, there's some interesting stuff in there. But it was funny when he was talking about O'Brien. O'Brien, was talking about the strategy of putting the team together at BC. He's like, you've got a really good quarterback. You've got a couple special players on the roster. And then a bunch of guys that are just tough, hard-nosed guys. You can win. You can win. And I'm like, this is exactly what he tried to do with the Houston Texans. Good quarterback, few good, really good players, and then smart, tough, and dependable guys.
Smart, tough, and dependable, though. It plays a lot better. I think maybe O'Brien might have an advantage just also by being at BC, where he might have a chance to maybe have more retention than you'd expect of his players by having a cult-like atmosphere, especially with the – it's one of two – FCS schools that are Catholic colleges.
Yeah.
And, like, they're, you know, he could be like the BYU of the East, you know? Be a religious-based organization that you're gonna get a bunch of guys on your team whose families are like, nope, that's where you're going and that's where you're staying.
Well, and it's a good school, too. So the point, a couple of the points O'Brien made in the article was that there are a lot of guys that do come here for the education. So they're less likely. They're stickier. They're less likely to transfer. Or
like Stanford,
I mean, Notre Dame's a little like that. Like if they transfer there, they're not transferring there necessarily with the NFL being the first thing in mind. You know, you still take good. You don't take bad players just because they want to get a BC degree. But theoretically, those players that are wanting to come there should come with more than just, hey, I want to play for this guy who coached Tom Brady and coached Deshaun Watson, that kind
of thing. Because I'm leapboarding to the NFL.
Yeah. The other thing that was very clear in that article, similar to Penn State, there was a big thought that a lot of people, when Jeff Hafner left, the old head coach, he left to go to Green Bay to be the DC for Matt LaFleur, that there'd be a mass exodus, that the portal would be full of guys and they'd leave. O'Brien's had almost 100% retention from guys.
He
can be a good salesman that way.
No, he can't. Well, you think about Penn State when he was able to retain all those guys, where basically every one of those players was allowed to transfer without punishment, under the old rules, and O'Brien managed to retain almost all of them. And I think he is good in that regard. I also think for O'Brien, you know, not to dig too much into speculation on the personal side of things, but look, he's got a challenge with his son and his family, and it's hard when you're away from the grandparents and your brothers and, you know, the uncles and aunts and everything. I think both Bill O'Brien and his wife being from that region and probably having family around, you might actually see a different version of Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's which would be nice. It'd be a nice story. It could be a really good story all around.
Son's 22 years old now, Jack. He has lissencephaly, which is a brain affliction. Yeah. And so, he's got a lot, you know, he's special needs. And his wife said in the article, I can't tell you how many people have commented to me how at peace he seems, how happy he seems. And the first thing I thought of, you're probably right, Seth. He probably does seem at peace because of the geography of the situation.
Yeah.
But you and I talked about this very thing yesterday with O'Brien. Like, this feels like something I said during training camp at least four times while Bill O'Brien was the coach here. Like, wow, this is a new version of Bill O'Brien.
Honestly, man, I'll just say this from experience in my personal life with a few people that have, like, medical challenges. People are going to give you the advice about support and everything. You cannot discount how incredibly powerful it can be to be around family.
Yeah.
And so for Bill O'Brien, yeah, I think that that really could be a big difference. That just he might be the best version of himself.
Texans, D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. Week one, this Sunday, you can hear the game noon here on Sports Radio 610 Texans at Indianapolis to open the season, 9 o'clock. Seth and I have the pregame for you. D'Amico Ryans was asked about Will Anderson's status yesterday. Will Anderson, who's missed the better part of about a month with an ankle injury during training camp. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Will Anderson's status for this Sunday.
We'll see where we go throughout the week. Feeling good about all our guys, ready to get rolling for the year.
Okay. So
that was a ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
That sounded like he's been running and working out and everything. We're already in the Kyle Tucker zone with Christian Harris. The thing that makes me feel better about Will Anderson was, okay, if the Texans had to make a decision between protecting Kurt Heinisch on the short-term IR versus protecting Will Anderson, they would have used it for Will Anderson.
For sure.
And so they didn't do that. So I'm crossing my fingers. I've been recently burned by just believing everything that the Astros told me about Kyle Tucker. But I feel like there's a very good chance Will Anderson plays.
He looked pretty spry out there when he was working out on the side field. My biggest concern with Will Anderson, and I guess this would be a question for Will Anderson if he meets with the media at some point this week or whenever, is this is an ankle. Is it the same ankle that was bothering you at the end of last year, that hindered you at the end of last year? And was there something that triggered it again, or is this a nagging injury?
Does he have gremlins in his ankle? Bregman has gremlins in his elbow.
Steph Curry had gremlins in his ankles for several years. He had to learn how to walk again, practically. You know, so Yeah, unfortunately.
I saw him run around a lot, but I never really analyzed his walking.
Yeah, he learned how to walk and run and shoot and win championships.
I saw the Rockets just like deciding to lose track of where he was on the court at various
ankles,
times.
Ankles, let him go. Cute kid, he's running around on those gimpy ankles of his. Four rings later.
I see the Rockets' best player just standing at half court and people defending it. But then I see the Warriors' best player running 19 miles per game. Okay.
That's it. All right, those are your headlines. Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. All right, Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour. The Texans GM will join us. We'll get ready for the season with our friend Nick Caserio. Up next, circle back to the Astros. What is Justin Verlander at this point? And yes, Kyle Tucker. Fingers crossed on old Kyle Tucker. We've got that for you coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Nor Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.